Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Juno Award-winning Canadian jazz pianist Sundar Viswanathan. Fresh off a Juno win for his 2022 CD Worldview by the Toronto award-winning jazz group Avatar, we get into this album, COVID Life, and so much more. This album is actually a commentary on the state of our world, on the pandemic, and on the inability of our leaders to lead with integrity, honesty, and compassion. We cover this and so much more. Enjoy.
Thanks for taking a minute out.
No worries.
So, yeah. You know, you've been on my radar for a while to talk to, and it looks like things worked out pretty well with the Juno Awards recently.
Yeah, a big surprise, I think, for us. Yeah.
What was that like? What was that feeling of validation after all of this time like?
Pretty huge. I mean, it was like, it's still taking a while to get used to. Like, I'm still not used to it. It's so many, you know, there's way more failures than successes, right? You get used to, like, you expect certain things to happen a certain way, I guess. So it was kind of a paradigm shift for me to remind myself that it actually happened, you know.
The one thing about winning this award probably now is that, you know, we've been going through this pandemic. There's been a lot of upheaval with artists and musicians around the world. How did you do during this pandemic, and does that add to kind of the allure of winning this award after what we've all been going through?
Well, it's certainly, you know, it's like from one extreme to another, you know. I mean, there was nothing during the pandemic. I mean, I was maintaining the music I was writing, and then we did the recording and all that. But music was kind of, it was a concept because it wasn't really happening. And then all of a sudden, I mean, I think I'd played one or two gigs before the Juno Awards, a few gigs maybe, not many. But it was still sort of, you know, in the distance. It didn't feel like we were back. And all of a sudden, this award it felt like, you know, all of a sudden the floodgates had opened and everything sort of, you know, been, the rains just fell on everything. It was a bit of a shock, actually, given it was so little activity before. And then all of a sudden this award, and I was talking to somebody and they were saying it's almost traumatic in a way, because you're used to being in this shell and sort of this quiet and everything, and nobody sort of looking at you, and all of a sudden, boom, you're in the spotlight. So it was very much two extremes.
You know, it's interesting. There was a musician that I talked to here in Kansas City that said during one of her shows, and there may have been 500 to 800 people in this area, that she kind of got into a place of almost panic because there were so many eyeballs looking at her. And for so long, she was alone at home. And I think maybe musicians, and I don't know if they're going to come up with a term for this, but I think there's going to be almost a part of that kind of a level of, I don't know that it would be stage fright, but there's going to be a part where it's like all of a sudden, after all of this like uncertainty of when we were going to get back and how it was going to happen, all of a sudden, like you winning this award, there you are, boom, it's live and you got to deal with it.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's almost like post-traumatic stress disorder or something, but not really the same. But there's a bit of stress having to go from nothing to all of a sudden to being scrutinized in a way. And that might be only in our own minds, but it feels that way because, you know, I mean, being a musician has its share of pressure and stress, right? It's a different kind of stress, but there was none of that. I mean, the stress, I guess, when you're not working, the stress is of where's the money going to come from? That's definitely stress. But there wasn't the stress of having to show up and perform, you know, and be on, rise to a certain level. And it was 2 years of not having to do that. So,
yeah. So let's go back a little bit in your life and let's go to the beginnings. How did jazz become your focal point?
Funny how that came in, because I you know, initially I thought I wanted to be a film composer. I mean, I love film music. But I went in for composition, in school in music, and then it wasn't even jazz that was offered other than that at school. It was all classical, so I started playing classical music, and I was just playing the saxophone, getting better playing the saxophone. And then I started listening, and it was really just hearing recordings, and it only happened in my undergrad, about hearing jazz recordings, and you know, it was improvising, just being able to, you know, I don't know if I mentioned this last time we talked, but when I heard Charlie Parker with strings, Bird with strings. That was like a revelation for me, because just, you know, he was, you know, calling him Bird, he was flying, you know, with this improvisations, and I thought, man, how maybe one day I can do that. Maybe one day I can improvise, you know. And it felt it just sounded so free and so you know, and so connected. So that was kind of how it came in. And then, you know, then I decided that's what I wanted to do. And after my undergrad, I focused on that. So it wasn't one of these things where I started learning it when I was a kid or hearing jazz when I was a kid or my parents were playing jazz in the house. That was not happening. It was really a later thing in life.
Well, and that's interesting because I know we've talked before, and the reason why I asked that again is because for context with winning the Juno and with everything that's been going on. And I think the one thing that I've increasingly had more reverence and respect for with all of the Canadian musicians I interview and talk to is that I love the fact that there's universal health care and musicians don't have to worry about that. I mean, in the States, I've gone to things here called Dakota Jazz Benefit, and it's for money to bury musicians that don't have insurance or don't have the coverage. Yeah, wow. It's unreal, man. So if you take that burden off of people, and I know a lot of musicians here have to have day jobs because of that, and then I hear about grants that you guys are having. I read the other day that Trudeau's actually acting on what happened here in the States with Texas, and he's going to ban some weapons. America's not doing any of that. I mean, we have the NEA, and we have some things, and I'm not building this up as though Canada is this perfect utopia, but I feel as though your government does things. They put their money where their mouth is. And our government will say things like, yeah, we value the arts, or we do this, or we do that. But at the end of the day, our healthcare bankrupts people. We don't get the support and the value from our government for art like we should. I mean, if we didn't have arts like TV, movie, and music and visual arts during this pandemic, can you imagine how bad it would have been for the human population?
Yeah.
So I increasingly have reverence for how life rolls up there and how the government really does value what they talk about they value in their populace. You know, I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. The only thing, caveat, I would say is that there's always pressure to move in the direction that the U.S. has seemed to have gone. You know, there's always the other side which wants to cut funding to the arts and do all this kind of stuff and you know, even cut public radio and things like that. So there's that. And so, you know, I have optimism, but I worry sometimes about some of the directions that, you know, that the government goes, but it's not the government. It's the you know, the opposition, and then, you know, the worry that they're going to come in and do these things if they get voted in, and change things, because, you know, but it's like a seesaw anyway. It's back and forth. I think what it is that in Canada, the left is more left, the right is less right.
Gotcha.
I think in the States it's more. I don't know. From my perspective, it's like there's two rights in the States. It's not really a left in the States, you know.
You're right, and I wish there was. And I think with Biden, we were hoping there would be more of a left. But I think there's been a centrist notion. But I think the problem is that this country, I've noticed after Trump got in, went through a level of division and a fear that if you do go too far to the left, that things are going to be backlash. Like, you know, we got our first black female Supreme Court justice recently. Yeah. There's been some other things that have come through, but I think that's interesting coming from the other side of things, how you perceive things, because we are all definitely people that do not support this right-leaning Trump brigade. We're afraid because the next election, the approval ratings for Biden are low. There's a lot of things that are stacking up, but I think one of the caveats of what we're living through right now is as bad as it is that they want to roll back Roe v. Wade, I think that's going to finally get progressives and Democrats to say we have to mobilize and we have to have action.
Well, that's what it is. It's mobilizing. I mean, from our perspective, and maybe you'd agree, is I think the right is very mobilized and they're very connected and very organized, where I think the left is kind of fragmented over there.
Yeah.
I mean, we're watching it very carefully what's happening over there. I mean, I'm impressed that you actually know what's going on in Canada, but because I think the eyes are, you know, are on the States. I mean, and you know, bringing it back to the music, you know, we talked about how worldview is, that was about that too, about the worldview on what was happening in the States with Trump and the divisions over there, and you know, what are other parts of the world seeing when they're looking at what's happening over there, and then, you know, how it connects to how children are experiencing that reality of, you know, created by our leaders, right?
You know, the interesting thing, yeah, and I think about, you know, a lot of musicians that I've talked to that when we talk about jazz and how it evolved over time, you know, Dizzy Gillespie and those UN missions were so important, where they would literally halt conflicts for a day in a province in Africa to let the music come in. And I think that's the great thing about what you're doing and what musicians are doing through all of the things that are happening is that there's this common language and there's this solace that we can all get from what we all really love, which is music. Because all of the things that we did during the pandemic, whether we worked out or we were home alone or we were cooking, we had music as the soundtrack to our lives.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting you should mention the Dizzy stuff or the UN missions. I don't know if this was the UN missions, but when Dizzy and other people were sent by the U.S. government to go and play in other countries in that time period, you know, they were sending the black musicians, and, you know, also Brubeck and them, they also went, but sending black musicians as a kind of statement that, you know, to limit the, you know, so the perception that other countries had of racism in the States, right? And meanwhile, it was blowing up. So it's interesting. I mean, the way, sort of the perspective on these things, you know, and I think they were great, but I think there was sort of an ulterior motive that was interesting given the political environment at that time. I think what I want to say was that I think it's so important. I mean, we're talking about politics. I think it's so important that artists are political. I mean, you know, they're not all going to be political. Some music is not music that necessarily has that kind of message. It's just music for entertainment or music for relaxation or whatever it is. But, you know, I think as jazz musicians, we owe the world to be, you know, to present our views in whatever way we can through the music so that, you know, other people start to think about it, right?
So speaking of live audiences and music being delivered that way, you know, as we all get back to it more in earnest, what do you hope we all collectively realize about the power and the magic of live music?
Irreplaceable. I mean, we need it so badly. And I think people got used to hearing, you know, the streaming and all that, but then there's really been a hunger for live music, I've noticed, and I've played a few things, and you know, things, I don't know if it's the buzz around the Juno, whether it was the buzz around Junos, but people have been really, like, getting in and getting to hear the music, and the irony, or the funny sort of factor around that is that many of the people, like, we had our CD release, a couple of CD releases, and I think at that point we had been nominated, and it was sold out, but then many people couldn't make it in because they got sick, they got COVID, or this and that. So there's also this extra layer of, you know, I got to get out to this, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to because I might get sick. And it's not even only that, but there's a, you know, we're musicians are dealing with the very real reality that, you know, a gig, you know, we have to worry about our musicians getting to a gig because of COVID. And, you know, nowadays you've got a cough and a congestion of throat, you have to consider, you know, you take a test, but, you know, and it's all these things that we have to worry about now. It's made it a little bit harder to get out in a way, but I think people are so, you know, they realize that they really need music so badly, and music is so important to, you know, to mental health and just well-being in general, and you know, realizing that, you know, that art is so important, and it just makes a huge difference in our lives.
Oh, yeah, for sure it does. Sundar, hey, congratulations on the Juno Award. Thank you for opening up about this very strange time on planet Earth right now, and good luck with everything.
You're welcome. Can I just say one more thing?
Yeah, please.
This to me is sort of a thing, and I don't know if you had a chance to check out my acceptance speech at the Junos, but it's posted. Anyway, I didn't really have a lot of time to give us 30 seconds, and I had this speech, and it was a funny story, but I was kind of editing my speech, not thinking that we would win, right? And then as I'm trying to edit the speech, I hear Avatar, and they're like, what is going on? I couldn't believe it. Anyways, I didn't have a lot of time, but what I really want, one important thing that I wanted, message that I wanted to sort of present, and having won this Juno Award, is that it comes you know, like you said, it feels very like finally kind of an arrival and finally being seen. Because when I was a kid, there was a lot of bullying, and that was like pretty well consistent through my childhood into up to university. And so this to me is a powerful sort of sign that we can work through these things and you know, that those become sort of, you know, to use those as stepping stones to get to these other places, you know, where we achieve certain things. And I just want that message to go through to all those young people listening and people who are going through these anxieties as young, especially young people, and stresses and bullying and bad situations in their lives, that, you know, find your passion, find your drive and stick to it, and don't let anyone push you off it, and you know, focus, and it will happen. It's got to happen. Just got to, you know, focus on it. So that to me, I think, is a message that I want to put out in my, anytime I talk to somebody about these things.
I don't believe this. It's unbelievable. So many people to thank. I want to thank the great band. I want to thank my family, my cousins, my wife, my kids. I want to thank my producer, David Travers Smith, co-producer. And I want to say special thanks, because music is what saved me when I was a child from psychological and physical bullying. And I found my space in music and my love in music. And I want to dedicate this to all the children out there who are bullied and treated badly. And let's all care for each other, everyone. Okay? Thank you.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview. We give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Toronto, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Sundar for his time, music, and for being such a gracious winner and giving us his time. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit neonjazz@youtube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. And for everything, Joe Domino, go to joedomino.com. And if you feel like it, you can contribute to the Neon Jazz cause there via PayPal or Patreon. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends. Time became a
Neon Jazz.